Accession number 22353, Reel 5.
Eric Warburton, Reel 5.
The ramp went down, and we discovered to our surprise that instead of landing on the beach, we were now in 3 feet of water. And all of us heading in one direction, that was to get as straight forward as we could and hope there were no pit holes that we were going to fall into. Fortunately, we got onto the dry land, and we then went to a place called Rees, which was where we had to debug all the waterproofing off the engines. It didn't matter, it was everybody pitched in and did it. The only difficulty I found there was there was a sniper picking off as many as he could, and so it was best to keep your head down, and the first time I'd hadn't done that in my life. And we got this operation finished and on the road to our first assignment. And so we made for our first assignment, in our first position, as it were, in Normandy. And eventually we found ourselves at this position, and all in one field, as it were. And it started to rain again. And I'd had a great idea, a brilliant idea, when we were in Rye, that if we backed two penthouse lorries together, close enough together, we then put a steel, two steel across the gap between, we would make ourselves a larger area for carrying out our work. And so, we'd already acquired a tarpaulin big enough to do the job, and we assembled the colonel, everybody, in the centre of where we now thought we were quite happily safe and dry. And the rain continued, and nobody seemed to notice that the bulge that was appearing above us, and it continued to rain, and eventually, with a large bang, all this tonnage of water descended upon us. Everybody got absolutely soaked. I'm just about looking at each other, wondering what to do next, and when a dispatch rider came into the field and gave a note. In fact, he said to the colonel, "I'm pleased I found you. I've been struggling to find you for hours. Don't move from here, you're surrounded by Germans." So the colonel said, "Well, we better bed down now until we get the next instruction." And I suggested that I remain standing up, and I would prefer to dry out standing up. So I thought, all right, said the colonel, "We'll do 2 hours on and 2 hours off to so that somebody gets some sleep." And so that's what happened. And in the midst of all this, pockets bulging with cigarettes, and I was not a non-smoker, and I thought, well, these things are supposed to keep you awake just in case I fell asleep. And so I tried one. I don't know what sort it was. I don't know which end of the cigarette I was smoking, because it was pitch black. But I coughed and coughed, and one of the chaps that I knew very well, Frank Law, said to me, "Give me your cigarettes and we'll arrange from here on. I'll have your cigarette ration, you have my chocolate. You're more in danger of getting killed with me than you are with those cigarettes than you are with them, with the Germans." And so that was the end of the one and only attempt to smoke, and I never have done since either. going on from there, we eventually received instructions as to where to go. And we found ourselves on the way to St. Lo. The Americans had got a problem, and as they always did, as history will show, that they always left the bulge and went round. They had so much
equipment?
Transport, that they could go round the thing, very easily go round the thing. So in every way, like St. Lo, and fillets and whatnot, they went round and left the bulge in between. And so that had to be sorted out. And so it was sorted out by the British. And so we went there to sort this particular problem out as part of our first assignment. And I had the first job then of and it was unfortunately a guardsman who had stood on a landmine. And he was brought in with just the bone of his both legs just supporting a tentage, as it were, of skin either side. And the RSM had just said at the same time, said, I'll come with you on your shift here, Eric, and then I shall be of some use. At the same time, we had just got started and gently dealing with this problem and making the man fit enough to travel, when Major Wellman, who was the CO of the A Company, came in and said, take his boot off. And he came in with such a panic and whatever. And before I had time to say, don't do that. And by that time, he'd yanked this chap's boot off and finished up by having sprayed himself with blood right from top to bottom. He disappeared, and we carried on. And at the end of that, getting that chap on his way to the nearest FDS, that is a field dressing station. The RSM said to me, I think I'll go and help Frank Law in the pack store from here on, Eric. You do that better than I do. So that was the end of the RSM's participation in the operation world of the medical system. Then that was the only job that I remember having to do on that occasion, and we moved then back up towards Caen and Caen Crossroads, and we took up position on the sort of the northeast corner of the crossroad and set up our complete unit dealing with. And we were very busy. And we had a regular shift working. We did 8 hours on and 8 hours off. And along came there was the 130 field ambulance who did the southwest corner. And so then we decided that, the officers decided that they'd work 8 hour shifts alternating with the two units, which gave us a better time of rest, as it were. And all the time now we were, of course, in our what was to be the normal position of counter battery fire. We were in between. They were overshooting us all the time. The mediums were in regular use by firing, and in return, of course, the Germans were firing again. So there was an umbrella, as it were, and we were in somewhere in the middle. And as long as they kept going over, whistling over, it was all right. It was when they fell short that we were in trouble. And so that was a situation that we were in for quite some little while, because not only were we there for the Khan, the crossroad job, but we were also there for some of the other places nearby, which is like Vernon, and also for Hill 112. And in the meantime, of course, a shell did fall short, but it was on to the 130, and it made a very nasty mess of the complete unit. So we were then back to our own system of working between ourselves, because the 130 was closed down. So that was the sort of first major attempts that we had of dealing with our job proper. Now we knew all about it. Now we knew what the medics do, and what sort of job they had to do.
How did you cope with the unpleasantness of dealing with battle casualties? Was it easy?
Yes, it was, because seemingly you accepted everything as a job. We were there to do a job, and we did it. And what happened was that you had this table. We had two tables working in this area, which we could call stretcher cases, for better and an easier term. And we had our round the walls of the tentage or whatever we got. Sometimes we operated in a shell hole. The Germans were very meticulous in their excavation for a gun emplacement, and they were absolutely precise and very nice. We were able to put tables, GS tables, round the outside outer walls of the pit. And then there was enough room to get two operating tables in between. If it was a gun pit that we were in, then we backed up a lorry and a penthouse lorry, and then stretched over canvas to come over the top of us. So that was fine. And we felt quite comfortable doing the job. I think it was the comradeship of or the intensity of the job that we were doing, and the confidence that we had in each other to do what we were doing. And I don't think we thought very much about the danger of it. Never thought about our people being in retreat. We were told quite firmly that if, in fact, the Germans advanced, we were to stay put. We then became a sort of prisoners working, or in working prisoners, insofar that we would be expected to stand and do the same job, continue doing the job, and that was it. And that when the advance of our own troops was such, then we would be obviously changed over. But it never happened, of course, because we were always in an advancing situation. I just remember that in the St. Lo position, we heard that the Americans were going to come in with their bow fighters and assist with ground fire, as it were. And they did come in from behind us. The only thing was they pressed the button too quick. Or too early, and they started machine gunning us rather than the other side, and that was a bit sad. And we didn't think much of the Americans from that point of view, and thought if that was our first experience of them, to watch out in future. And so it proved to be. But anyway, we back to Khan. Khan was it was tiring, the work was tiring, because you had no time to to relax. And 8 hours is a long time doing it. Somehow nobody complained, and the mug of tea was passed down into the gun pit or whatever we were in, and it was passed around. MOs, it didn't matter. It didn't matter who. And we had two MOs with us, one on this table and one on the other table. And they were like one of us, like a family, as it were. And it seemed to me that we had that was a sort of pattern for the rest of the war, as far as we were concerned. When we were in this sort of situation, these two chaps were in amongst us, and we were left to with them to do whatever we found was necessary. And if we wanted some help, and you know, and ask, say, what to do with this one, or what's the best thing to do here, they would tell us, and we did it. And it all came so naturally, and so that was it.
Were you treating Germans as well?
Oh yes, yes. You had first of all, you had your own casualties. That is, the British casualties. Then you had the odd German and British casualty. Then you had all Germans. Then you had then you had the Germans only. No, then you had the two women and children who had been damaged by gunfire and explosives and whatever. And I remember that on one occasion I was in a position where I was sort of looking after the Stacey cases, which were ready to go for the onto hospital or whatever. And there was a row of stretchers with various people, and mostly civilians. And we had a major come in to me, and he said, he was a Scotsman, and he said, "Have you ever been a midwife, Warburton?" And I said, "No, sir." He said, "Well, if you don't get rid of that one up there, you soon will be." It was obviously a dear lady who was well on to being about to deliver her child, and so obviously I got I made arrangements for the lady to be moved on as quickly as possible. I don't know what happened, whether she was relieved of her problem in the ambulance or what. That was somebody else's job, and so it went on, and that generally was the tone. Unfortunately, when we were on this instructions to move on, there was the fillets gap, and that one was a similar. Our job was always a similar pattern, and by this time they had formed the light section. They discovered that, by experience, that our field ambulance unit, as it were, in its original form, was too cumbersome. And so they decided that they would form a light section. And this was a light section of 15 people, and included one MO and around one lorry and one staff car. And so the idea was, and it worked very well, that whenever the movement was of troops and the front was moving forward fastly, then we would be sent on. So in effect we would go to a position and set up in this tentage that we got. We only had one work, we got an ME workshop made available to us. And it was quite a large, it formed a large working space if we were going to use this tentage. And we would set it all up, and operate, be in operation within, oh, a very short distance, not short time. First thing that I had to do my job was to, as soon as the tent was almost ready to be occupied, I'd got the tables up and the sterilizers boiling away with the instruments in them, all ready to receive our first casualty. And as far as I was concerned, that was my job, and I did it in such a way that we lost as little time as possible. Then in due time, the main section, the main body of the unit would come and join up with us, and then we would pack away our own lorry and our equipment and be ready, and we would join in and work then as the main group would do, that is 8 hours on and 8 hours off type of thing. And then if the word came, just a tap on the shoulder, and whatever you were doing, you parted from the main structure again, and you went forward to create a new casualty receiving station job. We were called CRS. It meant that we were very happily busy and able to be more efficient than waiting one big lump. There was an occasion when I went to a little village. I don't know why we were doing it, but the MO said there was a chap here, a Frenchman. And he was jabbering away and whatnot, and the officer came to me and said, "What's the problem with him?" And I still don't know very much French, but it was obvious that he's got a problem and he wanted somebody to go with him. It was a stupid thing to do, because now everyone in friction, because we were liable to be ambushed, knocked off, all sorts of things. And so and we went to quite some distance to this village. And the officer said to me, "You stay with the vehicle, and I'll go in to see." And there's just a hamlet of a square of houses, very poorish stuff. And he came out again, and most disgusted. This man's wife wanted a replacement douche can, and therefore and expected us to replace it. So that was a wasted effort. And now we were well established in going forward in this fillet's gap and all the rest of it. And of course then we went, it came time when we went to places like Saint-Pierre-de-Fray. That was down by the side of a church, and it was down by the side of the church with this little lane, and we turned round the church wall at the bottom, and there was enough room there for us to get set up, and there was nobody around, and there was no, I remember seeing a farmer come to the door of his house, and I thought how dirty it looked for a farmer, but then well, that's taken into consideration the conditions he'd been living in, perhaps. And as you know, their houses, they had the family one end and the pigsty and the whatever and the cows and whatnot in the other end of the house. But the chap said to me, "It'd be an ideal place to have a bath." So I said, "Well, didn't seem to me to be any problem in that. We've got jackanets in large sheets which we had as part of our equipment." So
jackanets?
Yes, it was a material that was waterproof. You generally used it for covering. You put the dressing on, and if it was weeping badly, you could put some of this on, and it would. And then you could then put another bandage over the top of that, and it would be useful. And but we had a big sheet of it. And I said, well, if you like, dig a hole for a bath and put some of this and put this in the hole, we can get a bath. So this they did quite happily because there was nobody around, except as soon as they got in the hole having this bath, half a dozen girls turned up from nowhere. I don't know where they came from, but there they were. And so that was it.
You mean grown-up girls? Or?
Yes, oh yes, they appeared. They appeared from nowhere and disappeared as quickly as well when we got started, you know, to shoot them away type of thing. But it was quite remarkable, and much to the embarrassment of some of these chaps who weren't used to that sort of thing anyway. So, but the main thing, the feature on that occasion was that this lane with its dog leg had to be supervised because traffic was going to come down, ambulance going to come down and go back up again. So we arranged with the RASC that they would put a man at the corner to operate a sort of stop-go system. And so this worked out very well for a while, and all of a sudden there was chaos with the transport. And whoever it was in charge of company sergeant major, I suppose, of the transport people went down to see what was happening at the corner and found the man flat on the floor drunk with Calvados or similar. Because this shed, hut, or what was that, was used for distilling this apples that had been, and then they were drinking what the production of this thing, which is virtually neat Calvados. And so he was changed over, and another man put in his place. It all went well again. And the same thing happened shortly afterwards, because the new man put on duty there also fell foul of the same problem. So it had to be a really serious sort out, and something which was a problem of the RASC, of course, but to keep the traffic going, and so that we could also do our job. But each and every site was similar as far as our operation, our job was to be done. We then went on, prepared to eventually to move off over Verdun. Verdun was down in the valley, and the infantry had overcome the cliff the other side. And I remember going again into the back of the lorry, but that's all. The next thing, when I woke up some 4 days later, we were in Louvain in Belgium, and it seems that I had some sort of dysentery or whatever, but as the unit was not in active situation, an active situation, we were taking DIF-SIC, divisional SIC, that is, and therefore that gave them the opportunity to keep me rather than send me back to hospital and then a holding unit, and then I would have lost all further contact with 129 Field Ambulance, because I would be put on in a holding unit and sent to whoever wanted somebody. And Bill Burgess was this chap who was looking after me during this time, and they were very pleased that I came come round without any further problems, and I made a quick recovery. So I don't know quite what happened to those 4 days, but nevertheless, we were back in action again, and they said, oh, by this time I had got a sort of repartee going with the civilians. And it seems to me that once you were known to do a job in the army, then you always got the job to do. Like in the early stages, the chap came back for retention dose of penicillin for his dealing with this situation, his condition of syphilis. And I was the youngest of the, seemed to be the youngest of the crew, as it were. And they eventually, well, so-and-so will do it, and so-and-so will do it, then eventually they get down to Eric, he'll do it, and so Eric did it. And so after that, anybody dealing with VD of that type of nature, or anything else, they, oh, Eric is the man to see. He's